That's right. Welcome back one last time to the Welcome to Westworld podcast here on Post Show Recaps for Season 4 of Westworld. And hopefully that's all I'm saying when I say welcome back one last time, because we still don't know if that's it for Westworld. Hello, everybody. I am Josh Wither. I am joined, of course, by my two partners here in the Valley Beyond Season 4 of Westworld, Mike Bloom and Joe Garfine. Mike, bring yourself online.
Listen, I've been online for a little while, considering how much you and I have been speaking about another HBO property. Feels
sure.
A little odd to shift ourselves back, almost Westworldian, right? Where, like, we find ourselves flashing between two different timelines, locations. What's the aspect ratio we're in right now, Josh?
That's a good question. Joe, have you been paying attention to what aspect ratio our conversation is taking place in?
To be fair, I've had one cup of coffee and I haven't been paying attention to anything since the finale.
Yes, pretty much the same over here. We promised you a Westworld wrap-up show. Life, as it often does, got in the way last week, so we were not able to do that. It was actually, once again, it's my eyes are causing all of this drama here on the podcast every once in a while.
Oh, you got the flies in them. Yeah.
The flies in my eyes. Yeah, I went to the flies doctor, and the appointment ran long, and it interfered with our schedule. So we appreciate your patience. We are able to get back together. We are one of the things when we were texting, we're like, oh, I think we're going to have to punt the podcast. We're going to have to delay it probably by a week in order to get all of our schedules aligned. Like, well, the good news is we'll probably have some news about Westworld Season 5 by the time that we're talking. Well, folks, it is 10:09 a.m. on the East Coast on August 25th. Happy birthday, Grace Leader.
Yes.
We do not have news on Westworld Season 5 quite yet. There's still nothing, Joe.
I feel like it would be really soon because of all of – everyone knows there's a little cluster F going on with the merger, Warner Brothers, Discovery, HBO, HBO Max. And there are a lot of projects being pushed back and canceled. Not a lot of renewals that I'm seeing. Not a lot of positive news. I was worried 50% the last time we talked about the show. And now my worry is that we're at a 75%, 25% possibility of it like getting canceled. And
Yeah. As
the days go by, I'm a little more concerned because at this point, I'm assuming that Lisa Joy and the team have scripts or at least ideas for what would be the fifth and final season, which I think was their plan in the first place. I think they know, of course, where they'd like to end this show. We've talked and we will talk more based on your feedback if you think this would have been a satisfying series finale, but I'm getting a little more worried. I'm not going to lie.
I'm nervous. Well, so Mike, you alluded to the fact that you and I were talking about a different HBO show. We're going all in on House of the Dragon on HBO. We've got 4 weekly podcasts on post-show recaps about that dragon show. So if you're watching it and you're not listening, you oughta. But my big question for you, Mike, is, so 10 million people watched House of the Dragon. Where the hell were you for Westworld Season 4? You sons of guns, where were you?
Come on. Yeah, you just had to tune in like 8 weeks earlier, the lead up to your dinky little dragon show.
Do you think that they were literally on HBO and they were just like staring at HBO Max every Sunday night for the last several weeks, looking as a new episode of Westworld dropped on HBO Max with a blank look on their faces of, doesn't look like anything to me. Could
yes.
they literally not see that Westworld Season 4 was on?
Should they have done something then within the UI where they accidentally replaced the images of the episode with House of the Dragon images?
Yes.
They're like, oh, great. And they're like, okay, this is a little weird. It's a little futuristic, but eventually
yes.
Daemon Targaryen will come in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll happen. And then maybe by like episode 5 or 6, and they're like, okay, I don't think they're showing up at this point. Something's up right now.
This is great feedback, immediately out of the gate, Joe, and I want to get your take on this. Does Westworld, in order to have a fifth and final season, need more dragons? We already had one.
We had
one. Don't forget, back in season 3, we even saw David and Dan in a controversial cameo alluding to the medieval world of the movie, of the Michael Crichton film, colloquially, I don't know how to say that word, known as Westeros world within the fandom here in Westworld. Do we need to go back to Westeros world? Is that going to be the draw for people?
The ultimate crossover.
Mm-hmm.
I would love that, but I hate to say because of the merger, I don't think they have the budget now to support a dragon on 2 shows.
Yeah. They can't just like copy and paste, Mike. Is that not how television
yeah.
works?
That's how CGI works, right? That's why they often talked about in Disney, right? How like the Robin Hood movie, right? Like often used overlays from other films. Just do that. I mean, also though, there has been some crossover. I talked about this a bit with Birthday Girl, Grace Leader, that there were some brain balls that popped up in the House of the Dragon. I won't talk about it too much because I know that one of us has not seen the episode yet on this panel. But from my perspective, brain balls have made their way into Westeros.
Oh, is that what's on the council tables?
That's our big theory. Yeah, is that yeah, the brain good. Balls.
Okay, good. Now that's now good. I really need to watch it as soon yeah. as possible.
Got to plug back in. Okay, so we're still talking Westworld. We wished that we had some positive, even negative news to discuss as far as what's the future of the show. I do think, to your point, Joe, that Lisa Joy has been making the rounds or had been making the rounds in the immediate aftermath of the finale. And I think really strongly indicating that the goal is another season at least, and that the story is not yet told and they've been building to this point for quite some time. And I kind of got the vibe from one of the interviews is with, I believe, Kim Renfro at Insider, where she was kind of talking in a way that made it seem like she's also a little bit at the edge of her seat of like, well, hopefully we get to do one more. It's hard to know without getting tone of voice and reading that over text. But I do wonder what's sort of the state of the union over on the creative side of the line on the Westworld team. Mike, I know that you had also been reading a couple of interviews with Lisa Joy over the last couple of weeks. Anything that really stood out to you as we're sort of launching ourselves back into Westworld mode here for the day?
Not in terms of what comes next, but I think a lot of meditation on season four proper, which I always appreciate from a creative and creator perspective. So a couple of quotes that I can pull as we're sort of like talking through all of this, but to just hear her meditations, because I will also say, like, watching the inside the episode stuff, I do feel like as much as we love those, season four seemed much more fixated on like the spectacle of it yeah. all. Like the entire finale episode, which I didn't watch until, you know, we were about to record this as to, okay, maybe there'll be some insights as to why they did this, was an understandable worship of like the VFX and design teams. But nonetheless, I'm sort of like, okay, but what were you feeling when you wrote in, you know, the traveling to the next world and ending where we began? So luckily some interviews have been brought in to kind of supplement that. Yeah, to your point, Josh, I think for a lot of reasons, I would say chiefly, you know, the new brass.
Who is Chief Lee?
Yeah, Chief Lee is going to be the new member of Ghost Nation that's going to come in for season five to replace Akichita since he's off doing other things. I think that.
But oddly played by Zahn McLaren all the same.
Yeah, he's just it's much like Manny Delori, right? He's like, no, I'm a new character. My name is Chief Lee. I'm the fun one.
I like that.
Yeah, he has a party hat on at all times. I do think that so much has been left in the lurch with regards to like how this ended. And so I don't know. I don't know if she's reflected on the fact that it felt like a soft landing for the series, that presumptively it could have ended here for various circumstances and they'd be reasonably happy. But that would be my assumption, is like if you're looking down the path, if you're Bernard and you're prognosticating one of the many scenarios that would play out, you're like, yeah, let me give ourselves like a bit of a golden parachute here from a story perspective. It may not be the best landing point, you know, objectively, because again, we talked about the Maeve of it all, certainly having the biggest unresolved, or at least I would say unsatisfactory ending. But I would also imagine this ending in particular was kind of personified and created as a way to say, yeah, in case we don't eke across that finish line to get past that 5-year plan that we wanted to do, this will be an okay place to rest our heads.
Right. Joe, how has the finale been living with you in the week and a half or so since it aired? I know you had said coming into the podcast, like, my brain ball is clear of thoughts right now heading in. You've had an eventful couple of days yourself. You were at a convention, right, in Boston?
Yes, I was moderating. I did 16 panels in 2 days.
You moderated 16 panels in 2 days?
I did.
Whoa.
Yes.
Joe!
Joe, my God.
And after not talking, except for you guys and my wife for 2.5 years, I was a little rusty, but I got into it. Yeah, I've moderated 7 conventions for the 100, the Hunge, and because I'm friends, you know, I'm really good friends with some of the cast, and they asked me, and I do it as a favor and for fun, and you know, it's good practice for talking and potentially future conventions. I'm available, people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So yeah, I've and then I had to get my Saul the Drillman work yesterday. I got, you know, four old fillings.
How
replaced.
Was Saul, by the way?
Yeah, Saul, Saul says hello. He's like, hey, how you doing?
Oh my God. We got a joke, all right, Saul the Drillman, folks.
It's worth it. It was worth the wait of an entire week to get a Joe Garfine, Saul the Drillman impression. You can end it, much like Westworld Season 4, you can end the podcast right here, and I'd be incredibly happy by it.
Incredible down the hatch crossover here.
Yeah, so I did mention that I got dental work, and now I'm back. So to be honest, the finale, Season 4 finale of Westworld was so deeply satisfying to me as a very avid watcher and somebody who watches every episode at least twice. And who has some idea of the show's direction in my own brain ball. I find it deep. The scene that I think back to is Charlotte on the rock, just taking apart herself. Yeah. And I just thought that was really, really beautiful and a really great ending to what I think is Tessa Thompson's Emmy season.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that is a concern of mine as well. It's like so many great performances in Season 4. Did any of the Emmy voters watch it? You know, is a big question I have, and especially when I think this season will ultimately, I mean, it's definitely going to be in the same Emmy cycle as House of the Dragon, and House of the Dragon had 10 million people watching, or at least it's 10 million is the number we're hearing, as Rob and I talked about on our podcast. Is that 10 million people? Does that actually count, or did Rob count as multiple people because he watched it in multiple different ways? You know, that we are probably, I think, going to see like a very heavy awards campaign for the new hotness in town, and especially if Westworld does not survive to a fifth season, I anticipate HBO investing about as much in Westworld's Emmy campaign as they did in Westworld Season 4's promotional campaign, which is to say, not much.
I will say it's also sci-fi, which, as you know, sadly doesn't get a lot of love. You know, generally speaking, I know Lost has, you know, got a few, and a few other sci-fi with shows.
Generally speaking, sorry.
No.
It's Grace's birthday. Yeah, well, we're just doing what we have to do.
That's Chief Lee's cousin, generally.
Got it.
I love how off the rails we are already.
He took what's his name, Craddock's place now, but it is Zahra McLaren.
He's played by Jonathan Tucker.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. But with like a nice little like newsboy cap on.
Yes. You know?
He's also the fun one. Yeah. Very fun Season 5.
Yeah.
Unrelated to Westworld, I think if Rhys Seehorn doesn't get an Emmy for Better Call Saul,
she will.
She has to.
She will, because the alternative is too bleak to consider.
Fair.
It's just too dark to consider that timeline.
Okay. I was just thinking, like, would Tessa go up against someone like that in for drama series? It's like, it is a stacked category.
It is. It really is. I don't know, Mike. You and I have a lot on our plates podcast-wise right now. Not quite 16 panels in 2 days levels of pandemonium now. Joe, you have eclipsed us and then some with your incredible schedule and feat of vocal strength. But I feel like I have a lot going on in terms of the creative headspace right now. I'm pretty all in on Westeros world at this moment in time. That I haven't thought a ton about Westworld in the last week and a half. And I feel like that tells me something. And I feel conflicted about what I'm about to say, considering we are on the Westworld podcast, and this should be the place where we're advocating for the show to return. But maybe the show ended. It's possible that the show ended. It's possible that the story is done and that it can just continue to live on in your head. And that maybe I'm just trying to protect myself against future heartbreak right now, Mike.
I mean, listen, I think there is an argument to be made that if you want Westworld Season 5, just press play on Westworld Season 1, Episode 1, right? That Dolores filled this entire simulated world with people, including Robert Ford, including another version of Bernard, and just had it play out all over again. You know, to go a bit into the theatrical, my favorite musical of all time is Into the Woods. I got the pleasure of seeing it last week as a result of my birthday. What a weird phrase. As a result of my birthday.
Is that what you did on your birthday?
On my birthday week, I should say.
Got it.
I went a few days beforehand. But that ends with one of the characters repeating the narration that opens the entire show. And so, again, that's just a theme and idea that I love. Just the idea of almost concentric circles, almost like a spiral, right? Where it's one unconnected line that just continues to move around and around and around. And so that, I think, certainly is a read. To your point about maybe not necessarily doting back onto it, I think it's because it didn't leave with a lot of unresolved questions. There wasn't even a mid or post-credit scene that would have hinted towards, oh, wait, something else might be happening, which was the first time really that they've done that, you know, in the first four seasons. And so we looked back on that one statement made by Ed Harris throughout the season, right, of like him saying this is going to be much more simplistic. Again, you could push against that when it came to the complexity of storytelling, but I would say it very much applies to the ending. About how, look, we can certainly talk about maybe a couple things that we might have misinterpreted in terms of larger revelations, but I am personally not walking away from this season with any major questions of, oh, wait, what about this? It does seem like the storytelling in season four was able to wrap things up in a relative fashion with regards to the mysteries and questions that it was creating over the course of these eight episodes.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I mean, if we come to find out that there is this fifth season, I'll obviously watch it. The three of us will be here whenever it comes out and we will guide everybody through it, not the least of which will be guiding each other and ourselves, because we certainly need it to talk things through. But I don't think that the question that I'm having, Joe, is I don't think I need it. I think that that's resolved for me. The question I'm wrestling with, do I want it? I think that the thing that I'm left really wanting is Maeve resolution. I'm really disappointed in Maeve's story if that's it, if it ends there. That I just don't think that there are enough extra steps to kind of push the character much further in my imagination, where basically everybody else is left in a way where, like, I could imagine the continued progress that they're making if the simulation is recurring and we're in something of this infinite loop and Dolores keeps trying and trying again. And eventually in your mind, you can come up with the way in which, like, progress was achieved, or maybe it never is. And maybe that's the point. But for Maeve's journey specifically, to kind of just get got by the man in black and left for dead and have nothing that is pushing her further at all, that really is tough, but that's basically it for me. And everything else feels, and it's a big basically it for me, but everything else feels relatively settled, or at least in a place where I can push it forward in my imagination, and I kind of like where it lives in my imagination. I don't know, Joe, are you feeling one way or the other? Maybe you don't need Westworld Season 5, but do you want Westworld Season 5 at this point?
I'm kind of like you. I thought it was so satisfying that I would be pleasantly surprised and delighted if there was one. However, like you, I'm shocked that they spent all this time with her still referring to her daughter. And then to be unceremoniously killed off like that, I have a theory.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. One more for the road. Let's do
it. Tana Mae Newton wasn't available for the finale.
Could be.
So that is the only that would give me solace, that she just couldn't be there. And, you know, it's COVID times that they were filming right in the height of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm just putting that out there. A. B, I was expecting a postscript, right? Either a post-credit scene, or even if they're, like we've talked about, maybe if they wrap it up in a movie. To me, it won't be satisfying until we see Maeve reunited with her daughter or in the Valley Beyond, etc. I just feel like for me, that would give me a sense of closure for arguably one of the greatest characters ever created. She deserves better.
Yeah. Mike, do you feel like there's room for a story for Maeve in your imagination of where Westworld goes from here?
Oh, yeah. Let me be so bold as to suggest an El Camino-style Maeve movie.
Ooh.
Right?
I'm in.
Maybe you don't even need the Westworld movie of, like, let's bring back all these actors, because like Joe has said time and time again, these are very, very busy people. Just do almost like an entirely Maeve-focused epilogue, yeah. Right? Of like, here's a character that for one reason or another was perhaps robbed of some sort of resolution from Revolution, I suppose. Give her this opportunity to like explore her own story, even if it is like 30 minutes. 30 minutes of Tana Mae Newton is better than 0 minutes of Tana Mae Newton, in my opinion.
Totally. I like the idea. What do we call it? Maeve Milano? I don't know.
Maeve Milano.
Yeah.
Cookies?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, listen, bring some cookies to Westworld Season 5 and I'm in for sure.
Yes.
Even like an animated project or a comic book. This is the kind of thing where I think Westworld, we've talked about this before with Lost, of like, I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been more ancillary material created around it.
You and I spoke about our idea for a Lost Rail Black covered the three intervening years in the Dharma times in season 5.
Yeah, I think like a Westworld audio drama would be fun, a Westworld audio book, you know, a Westworld comic, Westworld cartoon. I think that this is a great world that lends itself to that kind of multimedia approach, if not for the fact that HBO Max and certainly Warner Brothers Discovery at this point in time probably doesn't have a lot of confidence in or might not have a lot of confidence based on the numbers of viewership. But I think that could translate depending on shifting media. Anyway, a lot of this is sort of meta, but I think that that's the show as well. And I think if the show kind of ended in this way that suggests a reboot of sorts and bringing back things to Westworld, I think that it behooves us to make our version of peace with it. And it sounds like the three of us have. And I wonder who out there has also made similar levels of peace.
It reminds me of the post Lost situation with Hurley and Waltz, and like you know they released that little on the DVD, the what happened off the island.
Yeah,
just a little 6 minute snippet with Maeve would be amazing.
Oh, yeah,
the new Maeve in charge.
That's good. Yeah, we have to Maeve the island.
Okay, you win too.
What about the story of that being Mike that Dolores like. Christina Dolores basically takes Maeve aside. She's like, hey, so just want to let you in. We're in the Valley Beyond. Humanity is effed. The real world, there's no place for anybody there anymore. I'm trying to reboot life and civilization and stuff here in the Sublime. But you're cool. And you've been through enough. So your daughter's over there. And Maeve's like, oh, yes. And that's it. That's all I need, I think.
I think what needs to happen is that, again, to go back to the Hurley and Ben of it all, I think Christina Dolores puts Maeve in charge as her number two of like, you're my eyes and ears on the ground to make sure that everything's happening. And then after some time passes, she's like, well, you've earned yourself a reward. And then she like takes her into a room and that's where her daughter is. And then they close the door. End of it. That's all we need, in my opinion.
I would buy that.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com. Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Let's get into some feedback that we have from folks here. Lots of people who wrote in the time since the finale finished airing with lots of different takes. We have this from Al Chalant, who wrote in and said, I sound literally insane trying to explain what happened on Westworld last night to my dad that fell off after season 2. Yes, it was a happy ending. Everyone died. Even Jesse Pinkman's daughter and her girlfriend will die soon, too. And it was beautiful. Have either of you found yourselves in the position of having to explain Westworld season 4 to anybody who stopped watching Westworld? It's a very fun exercise if you haven't done it yet.
I have not. I just tell people who go, should I watch it? I go, yes, just read about season 3 online and watch season 4. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike, have you had these conversations with anybody out, the people in the streets, as it were?
Yeah, certainly I've had the conversations with my wife who did watch the first 3 seasons and I think made her way partly through season 4, and I don't think she necessarily finished it. So like, I also don't want to spoil things for her. That's my large thing, is that I don't usually I don't usually associate myself with people who are just like, just put me on it. Catch me up on what happened. For me, especially because season four had such fun twists and turns in it, and again, had a fairly simplistic plot to follow, especially compared to something like season two. I'm just sort of like, to Joe's point, go ahead and watch it. I'll answer follow-up questions if you have them, but like, I want you to experience it for yourself. But yeah, yes, to your point, it seems like a very fun exercise if you do find yourself in that place of like, can you like TLDR it for me?
Yeah, it's very fun for people who are like, just tell me what happened. And like, I start telling them what happened. They're like, wait, the flies? I'm like, it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing. The three of us have been pretty positive about where Westworld landed for the most part. Whether or not you want to say that that's how we authentically feel or it's a coping mechanism, why not both? If you can't tell, if you can't tell the difference, I forget what the man in black says, but basically that. But there were a lot of people out there who weren't as high on it as we were. I wanted to give some voice to that. This was from Susanna. Susanna said that my opinion is Michael Crichton would have been disappointed. I know I am. Crichton's books have a kind of originality, food for thought, but this seems like a lot of recycling and borrowing from popular TV and film like The Matrix and Drink Lost. It seems that sci-fi trend is to recycle like a DJ improving a song. I really don't want to spend hours watching recycled violence, recycled themes. So I think that there were some similar sentiments to this that were expressed about the finale. I don't know, do either of you feel like there are aspects of the finale beyond the Maeve of it all that left you wanting at all? Do you feel either of you have particular insight into the late great Michael Crichton to determine whether or not he would be disappointed in how Westworld ultimately took shape? Mike.
All right, light the candles. We're doing the seance right now. I mean, look.
Ouija World. Ouija board world.
Ooh, that's very fun. I mean, look, there's already a horror series based off of it. I was thinking that was Mike Flanagan, but I believe he did Oculus, not Ouija.
No. But there was a Ouija movie, I believe.
There was. That's why I mixed up the two. Mm-hmm. To Susanna's point, look, I don't want to get like too misanthropic about just the general state of medium and stories, but like, are there original ideas out there nowadays? Yeah. Like, to a certain extent, there are so many beats that consistently have been repeated time after time since the days of Greek theater, right? The hero's journey is something that has been a DNA of storytelling even through this season. Lisa Joy references the hero's journey when she talks about, like, particularly the arcs of both Dulcina and Hale in this season. That I don't know. Like, I think it's particularly fine to me. Again, I talked about this when it came to the finale of like, yes, ending where you began is tropey, but they're tropes for a reason. And that, like, if the storytelling device works, and for me, it's less about the skeleton and more about all the organs and musculature and other parts of the body, right? If the characters and, the emotions and the themes are things I'm intrigued in, then I can sort of forgive the fact that, okay, this is what we're doing for the umpteenth time. And that to me is just how I digest a lot of modern day storytelling, is that it's really tough to do new things that don't feel like, okay, they're just, doing the same old thing time and time again. You really have to look more so for the characters and stories that are being told therein with the people rather than, okay, they're going with this plot point again.
I just want to correct the record very quickly and actually, Mike, give you kudos for pulling out of your head Mike Flanagan and a Ouija movie, because it did happen. Ouija or Origin of Evil, 2016. It's the sequel / prequel to the 2014 Ouija movie. Am I saying Ouija weird?
No.
Ouija?
It ends with an A, but I believe people call it a Ouija board. So this might be board. Just like we've all been mispronouncing it, much like Tandaway Noon or Giancarlo Esposito.
You got it, though. Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan and starring so many of the people that he does his typical work with. So how about that?
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know why the works of Mike Flanagan are so deeply ingrained into my gray memory, part of my brain ball, but...
Why am I just now, Joe, coming to the realization that if all of the times we talked about what kinds of parks there could be out there, all the various different parks, the theme parks, the extensions beyond Westworld, never once did we talk about Ghost World. We never once talked about, like, sending guests into Haunted House Park. That could have been really fun.
That would have been filmed as darkly as Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it would have been good.
It would have. There are myriad opportunities.
Spooky world
for different parks. Yeah. Had the show been, I think, sadly more successful.
Yeah. Spooky world. I'm feeling the spooky world.
I would have loved to see, you know, like the Vampire Man in Black, you know, sort of, and then have put Ed Harris, give him like the Gary Oldman, like two humps wig for him to wear on his head. Like, oh, now I'm going to hunt you down.
Count Dracula. Wow. Count the Man in Blackula? Is that what it is?
Well, I heard Saul showed up, so I figured, why not make it Boo for Boo?
I do hope when all is said and done, when this show does end, that Lisa Joyer is able to share with us what the plans for other parks or what the future plans would be.
They never do this. No one ever does this.
I know.
I get it. And I understand why, you know, probably it's painful for the creator. And I get that. And that's important. That really does matter for sure. But I am still very raw about new House of the Dragon, successful creator, Ryan Condal. His colony got canceled. Yep. On the USA Network, starring our beloved Josh Holloway, with a cliffhanger in season 3. And it was one of those shows that was at the time where everyone's like, yeah, campaign, reboot this, Netflix. And no one did it for Colony. I'm so flipping mad still at all the people who didn't do it for Colony. And it's like, Ryan Condal, could you tell us how Colony was going to end? And I, as far as I could tell, that never happened.
Yeah.
You never know, though. Depends on how far they planned ahead. Like, let's remember when Lovecraft Country got canceled after season 1, right? Like, the showrunner was like, here's my entire series Bible for what I was going to do with season 2. So if Nolan and Joy had some sort of, I would say, like, formal writing as to how season 5 would have gone, I do think there's a greater chance that they would put it forward as opposed to, just sort of, like, throwing out a random tweet of, oh yeah, this is how probably it would have ended if we had gone so far as to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And if we get the Maeve Behind the Curtain movie, then they're going to hold it close to the vest until they release it.
So we had a bunch of questions about the nature of the ending. Nick had asked us, so is that it? Did that end up setting up a final season where they return to the park, or was that the version of the final voiceover they recorded to end the show in the event they're not getting renewed? None of the press with Lisa Joy indicates that this was intended to be a final episode.
Right. She, in fact, I believe in that insider interview that you mentioned earlier, like, they flat out ask, oh, did you do this having in mind that this could be the end? She said, no. What she said essentially is that they always wrote for season 5 to take place within a form of Westworld. Yeah. And it just so happens that perhaps if the show does get cut off at the knees, it gets cut off at a point that could be considered, again, like, a fairly soft ending point for the show. It was always the intention for season 5 to be in Westworld. If it ends in season 4, they just happen to stop it at a nice little point where they were going to go back to Westworld anyway.
This question was also brought our way to us from Ran. Ran said, so wait, do we think the whole show is a loop, as in Dolores has just been going through this same stuff for however long, and the sublime is actually a sublime nested in a sublime inside a sublime, and the universe and existence is actually a simulation? Ugh. I'm dramatizing the Og at the end of not the Steven Og here at the end of this bit of feedback. I think, Ran, if the show doesn't come back, the answer in my mind is it is that. That's how I'm going to view it. I'm going to move forward being like, okay, so the whole show just continuously loops within itself. It's a Westworld doll.
It's like the people who said that Lost was Jack the whole time, right? It was in his head. It was through his eyes. I'm going to politely agree to disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's all been in her head. I can't explain it.
Right. Yeah, I don't think up to this point it has been. I think if the show ended on this note of Dolores is rebooting the Westworld theme park in order to enact some kind of exercise to deem whether or not humanity is worth saving and host kind and humankind can live side by side, that then I could just go back and watch the first episode of the whole show and go from that point forward of being like, oh, this is all part of the simulation as well. I think that I can live in that space. But I'm not so sure that I am pretty sure that that's not what's intended.
Right.
But I do think that is, I don't know. Maybe it was intended. I don't know. I have no idea what these people are trying to do. Just give us a season five and we'll figure it all out. I don't know.
To that point, I think while we're speaking about Christina, we need to bring up a point that was mentioned in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, which of course you can become a member of at postshowrecaps.com/patron. So yeah, there was a lot of talk, obviously, in the few days after the finale about it. And then I would say like it died down relatively, especially with Dragonfire on the horizon. But leave it to our resident essayist, Riley, to stoke the flames once more. And essentially, he brought up a different read about the Christina revelation in the finale than we had. We had vocalized on the podcast that, in our opinion, that Christina's brain ball was essentially, from Hale's perspective, a quote-unquote fail-safe. That it was like, okay, if my big grand experiment for creating a perfect world where, you know, hosts have choice ends up going, you know, a little pear-shaped, let's then bring this out. Have Christina start this new world and then be able to hopefully reset and move on from there. Riley's read was that the entire season, Christina was the tone.
Right.
Was living underneath that big red Mesa-esque map of New York City, that she was the one sending out the messages that was telling the infected, the humans, exactly what to do. And that when we get this revelation in episode 8 of like her creating Maya, her creating her boss, those were sort of the simulated characters. Everything else was her sort of like running things as the guy in the chair, in a manner of speaking. Mm-hmm. So yeah, again, this was something different that I don't think any of the three of us read. But what do we think about this idea that it was Christina all along controlling these infected people?
Yeah, I had talked about Christina being the music. And I mean, I don't think that that's quite right. I don't think that that's like quite accurate. But I think Christina being the signal and sort of the quote unquote peacekeeping program. Yeah, that tracks. That does track. And then that signal being repurposed in the Sublime to see what else it can like regulate. Now that it's self-aware, what else can it do? Yeah, I think all that works for me. Joe, you got any big thoughts on it?
No, I hadn't actually considered that. So it's very interesting. And I think some of it for sure tracks. I was just thinking of really that the ultimate power that Dolores has had since episode one. And even if this wasn't entirely in her head the entire time, to have her, Hale is obviously still one of the OG Doloreses, right? So this version of Hale, the evil Hale, had Dolores's brain ball in, but she kept the original one underneath. I think that Hale knew as much as she was in charge, she would never be the ultimate one in charge. That it always was going to be Dolores.
Right. We had this from Steve, who had thoughts about Christina as well. Steve said, I disagreed with your assessment that Christina was a failsafe of some sort put in place by Dolores. She never intended this final outcome that happened. I think she just needed a storyteller to be in charge of all the stories of her city. It seemed clear to me that Christina was actually interacting with the real world. She was literally writing the loops on the fly, controlled humans. Remember that when Frankie and Stubbs were infiltrating the building, it was Christina that got everyone to leave. It was happening in real time. She wasn't just in a simulation. It was more of a virtual reality version of the real world. Hopefully I'm explaining this clearly enough. Hale put her in that job because there's no one better to be in charge of everything than another version of Dolores. So yeah. Another way of, I think, saying similar things.
Yeah, yeah, I think it does make sense. And I think if you track back, there was something where like a homeless man shows up in Christina's world and then like dies. But then there's also the same homeless man in the real world as well. So like, again, kudos to the eagle-eyed viewers for being able to track that. That being said, I did not get that read whatsoever the first time. So I'm grateful to those people that were able to fill in the blanks for my dumbass.
Well, can I tell you that I am coming to a place, and this is maybe harder as like a podcaster. And so it's a little tougher because like we're in the position where we have to explain the thing to everybody or try to at the very least. But more and more, I think as I get away from this season, and it was a feeling that was creeping throughout the season. It was like, I don't know that I really know what's going on right now. I don't know that I really understand what's happening on the show. This show could be really complicated. And the truth is, I often feel that way about another show that I podcast about on Post Show Recaps, Succession, where in Succession, all of these highly detailed, intricate business merger dealy wheely things are happening, and I don't know what any of it means. What I can clock is the vibe and the tone and this person's really mad at that person because they just said something horrific and they are rightfully upset, or this person is horrific because of this behavior that they are exhibiting right now. I can track character. I can track the emotion. And I felt like it was really interesting to me the more and more I got into Westworld season four. I think the Aaron Paul episode, episode six, really crystallized it for me, that I actually found myself caring so much more about the performances and the characters' emotions than I cared about what's going on. Ultimately, I was like, the show will tell me what's going on and I'll understand it or I won't. But as long as I'm having fun with sort of the visceral ride and feeling like I'm in the tank with these people, then I'm pretty good. So I walked away from Westworld season four feeling pretty set in my comfort with enjoying this as a vibes show more than a puzzle box for me personally. Mm. I think when I try to puzzle it out, I struggle with Westworld. And I think when I just try to enjoy it for what it is and the mood, I think I tend to be happier. And maybe that's a frustrating answer for somebody who's supposed to be like talking about it and analyzing it on the week to week. I think I would be frustrated hearing that from my podcaster. So I just want to give voice to that. But the truth is what it is. And the truth is that I think I'm just here to see Aaron Paul act against 18 different versions of himself.
And I think it also distills down to life, right? We're like, let's be candid. Do any of us know what we're doing? Do any of us know the answers? And Joe, you talk about how much of the fun is just like making 17 guesses and 16 of them being incorrect. And I completely agree about that. So like, listen, I do apologize if we had this misunderstanding, this misreading of a pretty fundamental thing. I will say though, as interesting as that point is, unlike the fail-safe theory, it actually raises further questions for me. And I do, the more I reflect on it, think that maybe one of the brain balls that got dropped when it came to the storytelling was talking about life outside of this New York City park. Because then, like, okay, so if Christina was the tone, was she the tone for just New York City? Was right. she the tone for everything? Honestly, outside of those two jamokes that Bernard kills at the diner, like, we haven't seen any of the other hosts or any of the other infected people outside of New York City. And I do think that was unfortunately a consequence of the smaller nature of the storytelling that spent so much time in New York City that, like, I just had a really tough time imagining what the state of the world looked like, just because there wasn't able to have any time or resources dedicated to it. And so that's why I'm having a bit of difficult time like chewing over it, because when I think, okay, if this is true, what else is true? There's a lot of blanks that get left open if it's assumed of, okay, essentially like Christina is the one that's dictating the narratives of all the infected all around the world.
Right. Joe, do you have any strong feelings about how this raises questions about like the world beyond Hale's City specifically? Because I know that that's a lot of what we'd like. There had been a lot of moments along the way where we're like, they're just really traveling by map pretty hard here. You know, do we feel like we've got a real sense of if New York falls, so too the rest of civilization?
I'm a Westworld apologist, as you know. I take this show at face value. I am a person who loves a mystery. I don't love an answer served on a platter. So none of this bothers me. I thought briefly during this season, okay, what about cities beyond that? And then it made me think, well, if this is a simulation, this is a test city. So there might still be real humans out there who have not been turned into robots. So that's, you know, one line of thinking. The other line is, I don't know. And I don't care that I don't know.
Yeah.
That's controversial, I know. But like with Lost, the fun for me is in the guessing. And I don't ever know with this show if I'm wrong or right. It's very rare that I'm actually right with my crazy theorizing about Westworld. But I'm one who has enjoyed the journey, and I'm just accepting the tremendous, tremendous storytelling and production value of this show.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Let's keep going here. More feedback. This is on the topic of the humans of the world of Westworld. So really kind of continuing the conversation. This is from Nick. Nick had said one decision that they made that I really liked was making it clear that there are no more humans going forward. The human species unambiguously goes extinct. I think it's an important move for the show to taking steps towards its end game, assuming the end game comes. Mike, do you think that we need to do anything further with the human world if the show returns? Or if the show returns, would you want them to leave like the physical plane of existence completely behind at this point?
I'm totally fine with the latter, because the entire drum that they have been beating for four seasons is this idea of what does it mean to be human? And the idea of there is a line that's demarcated between robots and between humans, and that line gets thinner and thinner as every season passed, right? Where we had people who thought they were humans and behaving like they were humans, but they were hosts. People who, I don't know, thought they were hosts, but turned out that they were human the entire time. That moment we always go back to in the season two finale, where Not Logan is like, yeah, we've kind of distilled human behavior down to like 23 lines of code. That is really one of the main theories that the show has just been beating into the ground for the past 4 years, has been this idea of, yeah, humans and robots are not so different. And I think the ultimate representation of that is to just leave the corporeal state of reality behind, right? To like put all of humanity and host kind together and then truly figure out how alike, how different are we actually?
Joe, can I tell you that one of the things that I definitely have been having live rent-free in my brain ball since the Westworld finale is definitely like getting like majorly concerned and having some existential dread about the fact that maybe we are in the sublime and that maybe maybe the simulation is real. And maybe that's where we are.
Are you sure you don't do drugs anymore, Josh?
I'm not really having major simulation issues, but I wonder how many people are. I wonder how much this messed with people.
Well, I think certainly when during lockdown, it was probably when your mind was definitely whirling with more maybe conspiracy theories about the world. But I have to say, whoever the architect is of this current simulation can suck it, because they have provided disgusting challenge after challenge to our world, and I am not a fan of this architect.
Yeah, whoever that is needs a speaking to for sure. Some people are not so thrilled with the extinction of humanity. Makes sense, being humans themselves. This comes to us from Chris, who specifically, I think, was upset about how this washed back on Caleb and Frankie. Chris says, while I really came to enjoy the Caleb and Frankie storyline and understand the final goodbye and closure aspect of it, I think the show missed a great opportunity to continue the story of the Resistance and a possible host-human future if Caleb became the first subject to finally achieve fidelity. When the love of his daughter steadied his hand while stitching her leg, I literally yelled, "Fidelity!" at the screen. It was one of the most subtle yet powerful scenes, as Caleb filled in that missing piece that had eluded all those who worked on the special project. All the other failures were due to the flaw of seeking immortality for one's own egoic reasons, and as such, fidelity could never be achieved. Only through the intense love of another could the melding of brain ball and skin suit finally happen. It would have been really interesting to see how Caleb, as the only remaining host, could exist with the few remaining humans, and if somehow together they could forge a new world. Instead of the whole fidelity test being doomed to abject failure, the success of one would have been satisfying and intriguing. With that said, I love the season and am somewhat surprisingly satisfied if this is indeed the last we see of the show. I think that's really interesting, Joe.
First of all, Aaron Paul, we didn't see his character die. I know that he was a shake and bake there on the dock. That rude. I'm sorry. He's an android, so I can make fun of him.
Now you're just like them, Joe. You're just like the season one humans. They're like, yeah, we can shoot them. We can kick them around. They're just robots.
Well, you know, our favorite shows have taught us that if you don't see a dead body, and on Westworld, you know, no one's ever really dead. But I feel like they left that open-ended, and I'm really interested in the outliers, not just the Mad Max, you know, Frankie, her partner, and the people living out in the desert. I feel like there is a potential. I know the show would not probably go back there, but there are humans who have managed to not be taken over as hosts and have evaded the flies, have evaded the technology. If this isn't indeed a giant simulation. So I like the idea that, you know, I like that feedback because now it makes me think, oh, maybe he will be the only one to reach fidelity. Maybe we'll see it in season five.
Gosh, that's going to be so frustrating for him when a couple of days pass and he's like, wait, I'm still alive. I'm not dead.
No,
I achieved fidelity. I'm not
Come
breaking
back.
Down.
Yeah, it's like having that big right sacrificial death scene. You're like, oh, wait, actually, I'm alive. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine. Hey, guys, come back. Can you turn the boat around? Yeah, it's tough. I am of a couple of minds.
He should just use his super robot speaker voice to boom out across the water.
Hey, come get me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
we have to go back.
I'm still alive.
I think that's a bit of like six thematic eggs in one hand, half a dozen in the other, because I really did like, from a relationship and character perspective, Caleb and Frankie parting, right? We talked about this on the recap. It's this idea of like, he didn't have the opportunity to say goodbye to her before, or at least come back and help her and work with her the way that he did here. And so it was an opportunity to close that loop in a manner of speaking and finally get that satisfaction before he ends up moving on. And I do also like the thematic relevance of like the test for fidelity never working.
Right.
That this is a Sisyphean effort to push this boulder to the top of the hill, but it was always an impossibility. That it wasn't this idea of like a perfect merger. And that instead we have all these other ways to kind of like cobble together a human host hybrid. I think that Chris brings up some interesting points that could also really codify itself upon other tropiness, going back to the tropes of it all, right? With like, Caleb could essentially be the one, the messiah, right? The one person that was able to do what the others couldn't and find that fidelity. And there certainly is something there, but I'm not entirely mad at the fact that they ended up parting and that Caleb doesn't get his own Jesse Pinkman-esque driving away from, you know, the ruins
sure.
in ecstasy moment. I found a lot of resonance, particularly as a parent, in everything that happened with him and Frankie. I think my concern is, as I spoke about on the recap, the fact that it was just so entirely detached from all the other revelations and action going on is probably my largest sticking point with the storyline overall.
Well, how about this as a possible solution to anybody who's disappointed about Caleb's ending? This is from Justin. Justin says, I know Dolores talks about the humans going extinct, and if there's a season five, it's probably virtual, but I have a crackpot theory. What if Dolores pulls a John Hammond and clones the humans and recreates the original Westworld Park in the real world? There is one major connection between Westworld and Jurassic Park. ... What do we think, Joe? Would Michael Crichton approve of Westworld taking a real turn towards the Jurassic Park?
He probably would in modern days, since there's so many merged media.
Jurassic Westworld, Fallen Kingdom.
Exactly. Don't invite Chris Pratt. But I think it would be... I think it would be interesting.
Yeah.
But...
I don't know. I like the idea of clones, obviously, in most of my media, but I don't know that it's coming to Westworld. This is from Josh. Josh Lemer had a lot of appreciation for the opening of the finale, which, Mike, I feel like you also really enjoyed. This was from Josh, who said, I know this is morbid, but wow, the entire 6-minute pre-credit sequence was absolutely hilarious to me. After a minute or two, I saw what they were doing, and I was cackling the whole time. Thanks to William, the world has basically become a version of Grand Theft Auto, where no one has any restraint. And it became a sequence of events that reminded me a lot of the SNL Dear Sister, What You Say sketch. Person A kills person B. Person A confidently walks away, only to be killed by person C. Person C confidently walks away, only to be killed by person D. And so on and so forth until Ed Harris kills the last person because he was annoyed that he only won because he was quote-unquote camping and literally uses that term. Which, Mike, that's a video game term, right? Of somebody who's just like parking it. And is just like waiting to pick everybody off.
Yeah, that was the kid with the sniper, right? It's this idea of parking yourself in one position that nobody can get to and then just picking them off. And look, we've used Ed Harris, Man in Black has been using this language since, you know, the first couple seasons, right? I know that Logan said like, oh yeah, upgrade with his weapon. Like he stashed into the med kit in season two. So like, he always talked about this being a game. Even when he broke the tones and started his own sort of new world, he called it one last game in a manner of speaking. And so, yeah, to Josh's point, like it was darkly comic, I would say, the opening. I could very much understand for graphic natures and just the darkness of it all, especially in the world that we live in, if like people did not necessarily take that away. But I think the way that Josh couches it of like, if you look at it as kind of like an over-the-top Free Guy-esque video game right. world, then yeah, it's essentially pretty comical to look at like the world that Man in Black wants, which is essentially like, hey, let's live in a big game where we all kill each other for real.
Yeah, this was Josh had also kind of couched the whole thing by saying the writers brilliantly and hilariously demonstrated that what William thought that he was creating basically just ended up being the world turning into what you see when you play a Call of Duty online lobby against a bunch of teenagers. So that's pretty fun. I like that. This was from Rebecca. Rebecca had a question about a different character. Rebecca says, with regards to Clementine, you noted that she at the end was very different from the carefree Clementine of the second episode. But I think another theme of Westworld is that coding is a base but lived experience magnifying characteristics. The Man in Black became William because Charlotte had him act like William. Remember earlier in the season, she even scolds him for not being more like him. So yes, we love Clementine, but she became the Man in Black's understudy and evolves into the Clementine that we see at the end. Joe, does that work for you as far as Clementine's sort of swift turn towards the uber darkness by the end of the season?
It works because of just watching Hale's, you know, descent into that darkness. But like I said a couple of podcasts ago, I was surprised that she didn't remain Team Maeve and somehow not even rescue her, retrieve the body, you know, take revenge on Hale. I was a little disappointed in that, but I loved seeing her this season.
Yeah. Do you have strong thoughts about Clementine that are still lingering with you, Mike? I know that this was one part of the finale that you were like, you could miss me with this.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought much about it because, again, I'm Don Draper when it comes to like these Clementine characters of like, I don't really think much about you at all. It was great to see her, but like her journey never particularly tracked with me unless I had to like specifically hyper-focus on right. it. You know, there are so many other boxes that we needed to check that I think Clementine for me was like largely at the bottom of the to-do list. But it's an interesting use of the character. I would say definitely the best use of the character since season one, though I think we could definitely say that about a lot of the characters as well, right. just given the general quality of the season.
Totally, for sure. What else do we want to get into? This is from the Ben Behind the Curtain. Ben writes in and says, I'm still fairly convinced that the final scene of season two, with William reaching the forge, is happening in the real world, at least the version of the worlds we've been in. If I'm right and there is a far-flung future where William is stuck in a loop in Westworld, what would that mean for a fifth season and the end game of the show? If we never get a chance to speculate further on that final scene from season two, Mike, do you have a place where it lands for you?
Yeah, it's so tough because, again, like, it takes place in a different environment. You know, you assume that it's back in the park. Does this prove that, like, was this a fidelity test in and of itself? And like, was it successful from that perspective? I know that we had theorized back when he was in the Tron suit of like, okay, maybe this is a part of that, that this was part of like almost a simulation within itself to test the fidelity of the Man in Black. I'm still going to go with that because again, I'm still of the mindset of, with the exception of Maeve, everything got tied up in a neat little package for season four of Westworld, looking back on the entire series, that like, there's that one little thing that's left over. That's that one little imperfection. Even though Lisa Joy, and maybe I'll bring in one of her quotes here, loves the imperfections. She says when talking about, because essentially it was asked about like Charlotte Hale and her ultimate sacrifice and the end of her storyline. And Lisa Joy said, the thing that is beautiful is within those limitations and within the foibles of human nature, there's beauty to be found. I sometimes think that perfection is unremarkable. It's just the same thing again and again, a perfect platonic form. Whereas if you've ever been in love, or if you've ever read a book that you love or seen a film that you love, it's those little edges that make it feel personal to you, that make it feel like it's touched you in a deeper way. So for me, these hosts who are told to be perfect, they go on these nihilistic killing sprees, and then they meet somebody who has broken out of their loop and is, for a moment, even if it's a tortured moment, free. That kind of freedom and fallibility is, to them, a form of beauty. To know what it's like to have silence and to have rest and to cede this world to someone else, to me, there's a grace to that, especially now when people talk about immortality. Lots of rich people want immortality and to boot themselves up to the ever-after internet. For me, it's like, you know what? Change and evolution comes from death. One of the greatest things you can do for the next generation is to die and leave the world, hopefully, a little better. And I think that's a perfect summation of not only the way that she sort of viewed the narrative implications, right, of like the outliers and like why people were defecting from the code that Hale put out there. But I think just a nice way to reflect perhaps around their storytelling and this idea of, yeah, you know, when maybe the season two post-credit scene does take place in this far-flung future timeline, and we'll never exactly get the answer behind it. But just because it wasn't wrapped up perfectly doesn't mean that it's any less beautiful. In fact, it might even make it more so.
Wow.
I know. Good job, Mike.
My goodness. Well, I guess that's probably a good place to close this one out, to leave a couple of edges to this particular podcast, as in life. Westworld season 4 is over. Is Westworld over? We do not yet know. Perhaps someday we shall find out, unless we're just going to be living the rest of our lives waiting for a Westworld season 5 and just no official news, which would be awkward. But when we get news, when we get word, if there is a fifth season, of course, the podcast will return. And then if the podcast doesn't return, I think you know what happened. What I will say at this point in time is, Mike, thank you so much for joining Joe and I on this journey. It's been such a pleasure getting the three of our lost minds together to talk through Westworld. It's been so much fun. And Joe, I can't believe that we have talked through all of this Westworld over these last several years and that there is the chance that this is it. It's really fun that we've had this show to talk about for the entirety of its run. And if it does return, of course, we're going to do so much more with the rest of the show. But if it isn't, I just want to say my brain ball is grateful for yours.
And mine for yours. I mean, we've been talking about the show for 6 years. And
it's nuts. Mike,
it is. And Mike, thanks for joining us, because I didn't know I'd have a tumultuous summer, and I had a tumultuous summer. I had a personal journey. I had to miss a lot of the podcast. So I appreciate you getting my back and that you guys were very flexible with the schedule. I know that you guys do this for a living and I do not. So I appreciate it.
No, listen, the pleasure was all mine. I am so
Yeah, Mike, now it's your
lucky.
Turn to be thankful and humble.
If you can, exactly. My coding is being like, okay, yeah. Engage. This is the narrative tree that I need to be on. I mean, look, I had the pleasure of getting to talk about the show on the Jay and Jack Network, but I always loved listening to the two of you. And I'll admit, had some envy going on as to like, oh, man, it's so much fun to watch them sort of like bandy theories about. I'd love to hop on and join that dynamic. And luckily, I got to ride the train this year. And it was really, really fun to do. Yeah. Exactly. I think that we had a really fun season of the show to talk about. Just like to your point, Josh, really enjoying a lot of the vibes that were happening, even if we didn't necessarily know what was going on, but we tried our damnedest to try to. And look, we didn't always get it right, but we had a hell of a time getting to watch these incredible performances. And in what is, in my opinion, undoubtedly the best installment of the show since the very first season, and sometimes even hit those high watermark, specifically when it comes to performances like Aaron Paul's, like Tandaway Newton's, even some stuff from like Ed Harris and Tessa Thompson as well, might have put in like series best performances. If it ends here, look, there are things that are certainly unresolved. There are certainly things that I wish they could have done better. But like, again, that is life, is that we don't necessarily get a sense.
There
of
have been
finality.
Worse cancellations, right?
150%. And so I'm just so grateful of the time that we got to spend. Again, much like that train ride, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And between, you know, you two talking about this for 6 years and me hopping on board for the last year, it has been a hell of a ride. And whether it is on this show or with these actors or with these creators, I cannot wait to see where we go next.
Thank all of you who have listened to us, who have wrote in. It's been really fun engaging with everybody around Westworld, and I do mean everybody. I think everybody who is watching the show, you were with us along the podcast ride as well. So we appreciate we were all in this together. This would not have been possible without all of you. So hopefully this was a fun podcast companion for you, and hopefully this isn't the end. Hopefully we will have more to say, but in case it is, we just want to be a little mushy and say, hi, thank you. You're so cool. We appreciate everything that you have done for us. So let's begin the sign off. Joe Garfine at Joe Opinionated on Yon Internets. What do people want to know? What do you want the people to know about what you got going on?
Well, in 2023, Cancer Gets Lost will be hosting a smaller online charity auction featuring items from like 60 shows, including Westworld, including Lost, all your beloved favorite sci-fi mystery drama shows. And 2024 is a 20-year anniversary of Lost's premiere. If you want to feel old, join us there. Yeah, 20 years. We have a huge lost auction that we're planning for 2024. We have some scripts being shipped as we speak from a cast member who signed his original scripts with his name bookmarked. I mean, watermarked across them. We have a lot of rare items from the show. So yeah, just at Cancer Gets Lost on Twitter, and cancergetslost.org is our website. And we look forward to seeing you participate in our auctions, and we donate every cent raised to cancer charities.
Mike Bloom, at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. You've got so much going on.
Yeah, I mean,
this is a lot.
So you and I spoke about it before, but man, we are elbows deep into House of the Dragon. You, much more so than me. You're basically like submerged into that tank.
Don't discredit that you have a really difficult job. Sunday night, an episode of House of the Dragon airs, and 15 minutes after it ends, you and Grace Leader are on the podcast breaking it down scene by scene. I've said it on a couple of podcasts now, and I said it to you and Grace privately. I am like deeply impressed with how you handled that first episode, and just like really, really in awe of your skills as podcasters. That is a very difficult feat that you two are pulling off, and you're pulling it off exceptionally well.
Well, thank you kindly, sir. Yeah, we had such a fun time with episode one, and it ended up being the perfect gift, to, you know, halfway between me and Grace's birthdays, or should I say name days.
That's right.
So it was a nice little gift to be able to do that. So every Sunday night, to Josh's point, right after the episode, we are going to put out our recaps, hopefully bringing some guests in along the way, because suffice it to say, people have a lot of thoughts about Westeros and the world of Game of Thrones. So excited to talk with people throughout there. Josh, you and I just finished our second phase of Down the Hatch, our second loop, if you will, ranking all the episodes. We did a big four-hour finale doing the top 10 episodes of Lost, which was so, so much fun. Not to spoil it too much, but Joe's favorite episode of Lost didn't make the top 10, which is incredibly exciting. So you can check that out. Of course, there is still more coming down the pike, more fantasy to be specific. The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, is coming to our screens. First two episodes are doing a bit of an earlier premiere than expected, going to be releasing at 9 p.m. Eastern on September 1st. I'm covering that with the great DM Philly, who has a huge Tolkien head in his own right. If you have no idea what you're in store for, don't worry. We have a podcast coming out soon that is going to give you a preview of the entire series, when it takes place, who we know, and namely what we don't know. It is a big unknown, especially compared to something like House of the Dragon that has outright source material. This is the only part of Tolkien's works that have not gone very much explored. And so they're excited to break that down on Amazon Prime as well. But let's not talk so much about fantasy. Let's focus on the nature of our reality TV, that is, because there's a butt ton of stuff that is both finishing and starting up. Again, Survivor South Africa is concluding what has just been a huge, very fun season this week. Myself and Shannon Gus will be doing a podcast with that, and then starting probably some very long deep dives with what has been a fantastic cast. Big Brother just finished its halfway point just about. I'm doing exit press for that over at parade.com, as well as the Challenge USA, which is starting to phase into its end game. And then we're less than a month away from the double dose premiere of The Amazing Race 34, as well as Survivor 43. The Amazing Race cast was just released. Survivor cast release, TBD, but you know, when it happens, myself and Rob Cesarino will be there to break down the cast. I did interviews with them before the season, as I have been very lucky to do as well. So yeah, I got a lot
so
on my
much.
Plate for the summer and the fall, but like, I'm eating good right now, right? I'm like a nice buffet of flies onto a very unsuspecting group of hosts and
people
humans.
Are feasting. Do we call this the bloomin' onion?
Oh, there you go. Because afterwards, you're like, I don't know if I should.
Yeah, you cry and you're crying.
Oh, I had so much. There's too much, but I'm incredibly grateful for the stuff I get to talk and write about, this included. And so while I am sad to leave Westworld, perhaps forever, yeah, there's plenty on the horizon.
Plenty on the horizon, indeed. You can follow me at Round Howard. I'll be tweeting out whatever we're doing on post-show recaps. I am also deeply immersed in Westeros world right now, talking House of the Dragon here on PSR, also on Vanity Fair on the Still Watching podcast. If you want to give that a subscribe, certainly would love that. We're having a lot of fun over there talking about House of the Dragon. Hopefully we will have more on the Westworld front at some point in the future. But for now, perhaps one last time, you can bring yourself